I somehow got the crazy notion that I could produce a documentary film. And part of that came out of the idea that I had had this idea for a subject back some years ago. I became infatuated with Conlon Nancarrow's music. When I was finishing high school, this was like 1969 in St. Louis, a friend of mine got a sort of a sampler record from Columbia Record Company. This little floppy plastic square thing that you put on top of another record on a turntable, and you could listen to little samples of different other projects that Columbia Records is trying to sell to you and interest you in. And even though it was a rock record that my friend bought, he was a guy, we played in a band, and he was the organ player and I was the guitar player, and he said, let's check out what's on this little sampler. And he put it on, and crazily enough, Columbia sent out this sampler that contained a Conlon Nancarrow player piano piece. In fact, it was this famous Canon X or Study 21. And I was just in high school. I was playing rock guitar. I sang in the choir at school. But, I mean, I didn't have some – this was like – we heard that piece, and it just blew my mind. I mean, almost literally. I felt like that guy in the, I think it was Bang & Olufsen commercials, where you used to see the guy sitting in the recliner and his hair was shooting straight back because the sound was just flooring him. And it was just like that. And I had no idea what was going on, but it impressed me a lot. And I never forgot the name. And then I went off to college and studied music and ended up getting a doctorate and all that. But I never forgot that initial encounter with Nancarrow. And then happily, I got this job teaching here in Fayetteville, and Dr. Barbara Jackson, who shared an office, or didn't share an office, we were colleagues in the department, and she knew I was a composer, and I was interested in trying to promote work of Arkansas composers, just because I had become one, and I thought that let's do that. And Barbara pointed out to me one day, she said, you know, Conlon Nancarrow's from Arkansas. And I said, no, I did not know that. And of course he is. He's from he was born and raised in Texarkana, Arkansas.
Documentary talks about his frustration with performers performing his work, and that kind of drew him into the player piano compositions. So I'm wondering if that has something to do with like why he might not be as well known as he should be.
Without a doubt. I mean, most composers get known by orchestras or string quartets or someone performing his music, it's literally a word of mouth sort of thing. Like if a string quartet, and he did write some string quartets in his one at least around 1940, and it got played some, but not much. And so since he ended up writing, and he just as you say, he wrote music for player piano because he grew very frustrated with live performers kind of botching his music. And he also wanted to take it he wanted his music to transcend what live performers could ever play, at least as far as we can tell yet. Basically, his music is about having different speeds of music going along at the same time, different tempos. And there's some music you can find where you might have 2-3. That's not uncommon. But then higher ratios get harder and harder to pull off. 3-4, one will encounter sometimes, even 5-4 or 5-3. But ratios that get kind of smaller than that are pretty much impossible for live musicians to work with to play. And that was the sort of thing he was interested in. And just all sorts of hyper subtle sort of tempo variations where one part is going maybe at 120 beats per minute and the other part's going 123 beats per minute. They just subtle little things. And that fascinated him. And in fact, he invented kind of a whole musical language that worked with that. And that's what he's admired for. In fact, many composers, younger composers, view him as like the first computer music composer, which is a very reasonable point of view. Even though a player piano is not a computer, it's not that different from one, with the piano roll serving sort of the point of like an early punch card in some of those early huge IBM computers or UNIVAC computers you'd see. And so the player piano, the roll itself is like a program, in a sense, going through, and the machine, the player piano, interprets that and plays it rhythmically. And so he could, especially after he adapted his his punching machine, and he didn't send these off to be punched. I mean, he would dream up this music, and he came up with a way to kind of lay it out so that he could have these subtle tempo relationships. And then he punched every hole by himself. He said it took him usually a year to finish one piece, and some longer than that. Some of them had, and he wasn't a minimalist composer in any stretch. I mean, if you listen to any of his music, there are notes flying everywhere. So he was a really notey sort of composer, and he had to punch every one of those notes by hand with this hole punching machine he developed. But he got it adjusted at one point, probably in the late 1950s, so he could put a note anywhere on the roll that he wanted and thereby have just absolutely any imaginable tempo relationship, which wasn't possible before, and really hasn't been possible until the last maybe dozen years when computer software has come to that point. So he was in many ways the first computer composer. The big difference there is that it wasn't a computer. It wasn't some sort of sample or synthesizer playing the music. It was a very real-sounding piano playing it. And as everyone has said, in fact, the documentary starts off with these people talking about what an impact hearing his music played in his studio had. It's kind of shocking. I mean, it's just so loud and incisive and dramatic. It's completely different from like putting on headphones from an iPhone or something and listening to a tune. It's just very visceral. And it's like the sound waves are literally right there outside your body, just kind of making you quiver a little bit as you're hearing it.